Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Hey, good evening, everyone. Welcome to another Tuesday night installment here at Your Remedies in the Law. Tonight, of course, we're discussing various IRS administrative remedies with our speaker, Mr. Tony Davis. My name is Martin Michaels. I'll be your host for this evening's conference brought to you by Your Remedies in the Law, which is in direct affiliation with Americans Restoring America. Before we get started with this evening, though, it is very important that I provide you with the following disclaimer. Nothing that you hear on this call tonight may be deemed by you in any way, shape, or form to be legal advice. If you are on this call because of a situation in your life where you require legal advice, I very politely ask you to hang up the phone. Now, we don't mean to sound rude when we say this. We just want to express to everyone in no uncertain terms that anyone joining this call looking for legal advice has no place or business here. Nobody here at Your Remedies in the Law or any of the programs offered by Americans Restoring America is a lawyer, attorney, or any member of the bar. Therefore, no one here is able to offer you any legal advice. Should you require legal advice, my advice to you would be get an attorney. As for these calls, they're all just for entertainment purposes. It's just folks saying what they might do where they're similarly situated to you. You might get a little bit of education out of it, but mainly you're just going to get folks' opinions about what they might do. However educated and experienced these thoughts and opinions might be, they are just people's opinions nonetheless, and it's always up to you to do your own due diligence. All right, on to the next subject. I'd like to go over a few things here with Your Remedies in the Law, if I could, very quickly. First of all, if I can take everybody to the homepage of www.yourremediesinthelaw.com, if we look up in the upper right-hand corner, we see a little picture of the Constitution. Click on that, and you'll have a separate page come up with just two items on it. These two items are of much importance, though, especially if this is all new to you. First and most importantly on the left is the jurisdictionary course. This is your 24-hour crash course on the rules of civil procedure. Better known to some as American jurisprudence or ANJUR, the rules of civil procedure are essentially the foundation or structure upon which all law in America rests. So to have a firm and thorough understanding of these rules means to have at least a basic understanding of what's going on in virtually any court scenario that you find yourself in. On the right is the common law default process, mostly known for its high national win rate in most traffic cases throughout the country. At least that's what it's most popularly acquired for. But that is not really why it's on this page. The reason that we have it up here with the jurisdictionary course is when you go through it, you'll notice that it utilizes a lot of the same fundamental procedures that you learned about in the jurisdictionary course. So it kind of acts as a real-life homework assignment. Also, for a lot of folks, it's their first time committing to action. Folks seem a little more willing to take that first step, probably because of such a high success rate and traffic scenarios being such a common interest in this country today. The common law default, although known majorly for traffic purposes, has many other. Truly, it's for most scenarios that you may find yourself in where there's no damage to property or person. It's just some entity is claiming you broke a rule, therefore you must pay a civil penalty. Both of these items are very affordably priced, the jurisdictionary with a contribution of $250 and the common law default at $150. Also on the subject of Your Remedies in the Law, most of you are probably familiar now with Americans Restoring America. Every time you visit the homepage of YourRemediesInTheLaw.com, you are met with that blue box that pops up asking if you'd like to continue on to the site that you were visiting or stay and visit Americans Restoring America. The reason that we've done this is very simple. We're trying to get folks to explore. There are multiple information providers talking about multiple subjects, as well as many other features of Citigroup's at Your Remedy is in the Law. And Your Remedy is in the Law is just one of a couple dozen websites that all together make up Americans Restoring America. So there's quite a bit for you to see, and we hope that you'll do just that at your leisure. If you have any questions about whether or not we have an information provider that could give you their personal educated opinion about your particular situation, get a hold of us at yourremediesinthelaw.com, and we'll be happy to assist you in any way that we can. Statewide communications. If you're not already a member, please do sign up. Tell your friends and family about it. That's that map of the United States that you see on virtually every site that we have. It's a private communications platform that enables folks to speak with one another on a local level based on a very strict, pre-decided topics of discussion. Essentially, how it works is this. A wizard will walk you through a very easy setup. You know, put your name in here, click next. Put your zip code in here, click next, that sort of thing. Then we'll walk you through the remainder of the setup. And then you get to a point where it will ask you, what are your hot points interested in? This could range anything from credit card issues, home foreclosure, IRS matters, asset protection, or maybe veterans' rights, maybe personal health rights. Anything that you can think of. And if it affects your personal rights, you should find it in that list or something that's close enough. When the setup is complete, it puts it all together, much of how you think of a social network. Though nothing like a social network. It's very custom, it's very private. But it then puts you in contact with people in your local area that have similar interests to you. The idea here is to put the power of education and communication back in the hands of the common man. If you are in need of legal advice or you need someone to represent you, you're going to have to get an attorney. It's just that simple. But if there was a way, a private place that you could go to discuss matters, your personal opinions, their personal opinions, with people that were like-minded, maybe you jump online one day and you say, this happened to me today. First person comes back and says, well, I disagree with that. I don't think that they should be able to do that. I don't think that's fair. Well, that's probably not going to be of a tremendous amount of help to you. Maybe the next person comes on and says, well, I'll tell you what I would do were I similarly situated. I'd watch these YouTube videos, and then I'd go down there to my local county courthouse, go to the law library, get a law dictionary, and look at these terms. Maybe the next person after that says, those all sound like great ideas. I'd also go to this particular website and check out these educational materials that might assist you in your learning. And then for you to go and do some due diligence on what you're reading, just people's suggestions, people's opinions at all. But if you did some due diligence and educated yourself, maybe the farther you got into it, you discovered that it's not as difficult as you initially thought it would be because you're focused on one single subject. And you get to the point where you've educated yourself, and now you're handling your own affairs, your own matters. Well, folks, there's nothing illegal or unlawful about that. And that's all we're trying to do here at Statewide Communications is just very simply get people to start talking again. Of course, there's no cost to you for using Statewide Communications, either signing up or the regular using of it. And so we hope that you'll pass that around. Freedoms Radio. If you're over the road, you don't want to deal with the call process, and you're just new to Your Remedies in the Law, and you don't yet have your username and password, therefore you can't see the phone number in the PIN. By the way, if you'd like to pick up a membership to Your Remedies in the Law, it's very easy. You just simply click the register button. Fill out your basic information there. You'll enjoy the first 30 days for free to evaluate it. After that, it converts to a very affordable $10 a month on your credit card or your PayPal. But every single call is recorded. You have years of archives to go through, a vast wealth of knowledge, as well as many other wonderful features. But if that's not an option for you today, you have freedomsradio.com. Every night, the calls go out over the air at 9 p.m. Eastern live. There's also the question bar there where you can type in a question, click submit. As long as that's during call hours, that will pop up on the moderator screen, and we do our best to read every single one of those questions out over the air, as long as they are appropriate. So you don't get the one-on-one with the information provider like you would be by being a private member, but you do get your questions answered. There's no cost to utilize Freedoms Radio, so no matter where you are or your circumstances, you never have to miss a call again if you don't wish. All right, winding down here, I'd like to go over one last bit of housekeeping. This is your caveat emptor, or your buyer beware. For any purchase that you may make at your MEAs in the law or any of the other sites underneath the umbrella of America's Restoring America, when you come aboard and you go with an information provider, you are doing just that. Information provider's paying Mr. Edward for advertising at your MEAs in the law. This payment would be an expense to that information provider along with any other expenses that they might have associated with your particular product or service. When you contact us, all we simply do is listen to your particular scenario, quickly deduce from a list of folks that honestly most of you would probably never be able to find on your own just simply because they can't be found. Can we make those introductions? Not every part on the information provider is always going to be successful. Everybody always hopes for the best. We plan for the best, and believe you me, we aim for the best. But unavoidable things do sometimes happen, and when they do, you have to roll with them and deal with them as you would with anything else in life. But we also want to emphasize, though, that the intent is always to be successful. If you have any questions of that, we welcome you to visit www.yourremedyisinthelaw.com/testimonials. And see what others have to say about these products and services. Now let's touch very quickly on the subject of refunds or the refund policy. There is none. Not if the remedy is in the law anyway. Of course, when you come aboard and you go with a particular information provider, again, that is exactly what you're doing. So any discussion of a refund or a credit would be a strict and private matter between you and the information provider. And even then, that's very few and far between. It must be extenuating circumstances. You are expected to have done your due diligence before you commit to any particular process or information provider's time. All right. Lastly, pertaining here to all of the information providers at your MEAs in the law, we'd like you to remind everybody that all of our speakers at these conferences are our guests and should be treated with the highest level of respect. If you disagree with something that a speaker has to say, that's fine. Disagreeing is how we learn, but please, you must always be civil. Besides, if we can dispose properly and then answer properly, then we can all learn something from it.
Well, Martin, thank you so very much for this disclaimer. We appreciate you. This evening, ladies and gentlemen, is a further extension, I think it's part four, of the title of Holding Land in Allodium is the correct phrase. It's called, often referred to as allodial title. The thing is that if you hold land in allodial title, in allodium, can a slave own land? The answer is no. So if you study the court cases surrounding the term United States citizen, you'll learn that that person that is a franchise and property of the United States. So that person could not own land in allodium. Can be a tenant on the land, but can't own the land in allodium. So the first step, obviously, bringing your land into allodium, first step's going to be to correct your status, which we cover on the Monday night calls. So without further ado, it is my pleasure to turn this call over to Brother John, and he will share with you his part four of his expression of holding land in allodium, and know that he has over 40 years involved in this process. So it's my pleasure to turn the call over now to John. Go ahead, brother.
Good evening, Michael and Martin. Thank you very much for your kind and gracious introductions. title in allodium is usually referred to as the capacity to own or the condition in which with an individual has traced the property etymology back to a place where it is fee simple or without encumbrance and does not have a superior authority controlling it. British feudal law goes into extensive cases to support Lodial title, in that if any of you saw the movie Braveheart, there's other movies that they or if you saw The Mask of Zorro, in the beginning of the movie The Mask of Zorro, this Spanish administrator is handing land titles over to an individual, and he says, but these, all of this property belongs to Spain. He says, we're giving it to the Dons, who Spain will recognize that they are the dutiful taxpayers, but they, the grants that they were being given in the movie were technically grants that were given in a lodium title, meaning that the owner of the property was the highest authority. And what happened was that in the case of Mexico, the Dons were the dutiful taxpayers, meaning that they had the they were the ones that actually held the title. And when Spain or Mexico needed income or resources, the Dons or the property owners were the ones that provided that. And there were many mechanisms by with which the administrators of those different countries, whether it was the king in Spain or the different individuals in Mexico, or going back to Great Britain, etc., there were many mechanisms which they used to extract the taxes from the landowners. But the landowners, and if you remember the old movie, the Errol Flynn movie, Robin Hood, at one point there's a lady that says, but you can't tax this man, you can't take this man, he's a landowner. That was very, very true. The centurions that were in the process of ravaging his goods and wares of the tavern that he owned, he was the landowner, and legally they could not do what they were doing, except that under the tyranny of the character in the movie Prince John, he was breaking all the rules. Well, some of what is in those movies is not creative licenses taken out of history and reality. And to that end, don't worry, it's much worse than you think. We also have the Prince Johns and the others that don't really care about the formalities and the law. What's in their best interest is the law, at least to them. And there's tracing a property back, a lodial title is tracing the property back to its, they say, original land grant. Well, that's a little bit of a toughie, because if you say back to the beginning, when is, if you use that term about this third rock from the sun that we call Earth and home, when was the beginning? And it's a very subjective term. When was the beginning? The precepts that were situated around the beginning. And what happens is that a lodial title, they believe that in this particular case, the tracing it back to the land grants of the countries that held it, to them, that's kind of the place where they've arbitrarily punctuated the beginning. Because if you remember back in history, and of all of the historical accounts that are in non-religious and religious texts, I find that the religious texts, or the historical accounts that are held in many religious texts. Much of it is very accurate. And while mixed with religious texts, some individuals, because they don't tend to agree with the particular religious text or because the text doesn't quite color between the lines as far as an individual would believe it should, they tend to disregard the historical data that's in that religious text. And if you go back into a Hebrew Christian religious text, it talks about there's a time when this king takes place and is sovereign in the land of Israel and takes a wife from the daughter of Pharaoh until such time as the temple and the palace were built. And we're talking about Solomon. And it says that he sent a fleet of trading ships all over for gold and silver, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And what happens is that the reason why a lot of the artifacts that are found in Central America, like the pyramids and such, match that of Egypt, wasn't that there was parallel separate cultures that developed. It was because the king of Israel was given Egyptian slaves to go mine and harvest what he needed for his building plan that there were, which was the temple and his palace at the time. There have been two keelsons of two ships that have iron in them that have been discovered off the northeast coast of Central or South America, off the Venezuelan coast, and they, which indicates that they were Phoenician, and they had not only Phoenician artifacts on them, but Aztec, Toltec, Mayan, Egyptian, and Hebrew. Eric Von Doniggan many years ago did a movie called Chariot of the Gods, you know, and they implied that the reason why there were no mass burial graveyards in Central America was they were all spirited away. Actually, they may have been here for the purpose of mining gold and other precious metals. And when they got what they needed, they were done and they went home. Except in this particular case, it appears that two ships floundered in storm, and even some of the bones of the individuals were still found among the wreckages of the keelson. In New Mexico, there's a mine that on the granite wall on either side of it is carved the Ten Commandments in two languages. One of them was in Hebrew, the other was in Phoenician. The Arizona Indians hold legends of Canyon del Oro, or the Canyon of Gold, or God's Canyon of Gold. And the stories that include the Lost Dutchman's mine entail or interwoven into that particular historical fact. If I had worked for the U.S. government and been part of the Airborne Space-Based Intelligence Development Group back in the 70s, which I'm not admitting I did, all of those types of deposits may have been identified from space and long since harvested, shall we say. But at the same time, the Indians, wait a minute. That's right. There were Indians there. And when the Americans settled the plains, there were Indians. And after the time of Solomon, there's an event where all of Israel comes to Solomon or Solomon's son Rehoboam and says, hey, look, paraphrased, your grandfather was really tough on us and your father was even worse, but can you chill? Your temple and your palace are built. ease up on the taxes, and we'll serve you. And most of you know the story. Says, chill out, go take 3 days, come back, and we'll talk. In the meantime, he talks to his dad's advisors. He says, this is cool. You should do it. Okay, you guys take off, take a hike. He invites his friends in, and they say, wait a minute, guys, we got an issue here. Taxes, taxes, taxes. Income, income, income. This is cool. He goes back and he says, David scourged you with whips, and my father scourged you with scorpions, but my little finger is bigger than my father's thigh. And a gentleman named Jeroboam says, away to your tents, O Israel. What part should we have in the house of Jesse or the son of David? And this guy later says to himself, and we find this in multiple texts, he says, and Jeroboam said unto himself, at such time as it comes time to worship, they shall go on down to Judah, down to Jerusalem, and they shall return unto Rehoboam, and they'll put me to the sword. So in the two main trade routes going down to Israel, he set up an altar with a golden calf, and he moves the times up. And while the people are on this long journey down to for the regular feast that they're required by Hebrew law to celebrate, wait a minute, hey guys, we got an altar here, and this one, and our celebration date is on this day, it's before that one, so you're right in time. And they had a golden calf on both altars. And they set up one in an altar of Bethel of Dan and one on Ephraim. And all of a sudden we have a prophet showing up, somebody claiming to be from God, saying, hey, you've changed my appointed times, you've changed my appointed feasts. The people no longer call upon me, they call upon the name of another God. Therefore, death, decimation, dispersion. You know, whoever, the Assyrians are going to come in and they're going to, paraphrase, kill and destroy. And those that are not killed will go into captivity. And those that don't go into captivity will just be dispersed. Well, these guys just got, many of these families, maybe some of these individuals are very wealthy, had just got done being overseas mining precious metals and stones and everything for the temple. They, using what little wealth they had, remembering that there was a land that roamed of 11 kinds of kosher beef, they contracted with the Phoenicians to take them back to where they were mining, America. Not much of the original temple of Solomon remains, but it says in the time of Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, Nebuzaradan laid siege to Jerusalem and laid siege to the temple. And when he finally entered, he wailed and lamented because none of the gold furnishings and the candlesticks and the lampstands and the altar and the Ark of the Covenant were not there to be found. It says that they took apart every stone, and they burned the temple. All of a sudden, realizing that some of the precious metals had melted in the fire, they started taking apart the stones to get the little bit of precious metal out. The gold and silver they were interested in, the copper was too useless to pay attention to. But in the Rockefeller Museum in Jerusalem to this day, they still have actual samples and actual material that was part of Solomon's temple that are copper. They have whole copper artifacts. When a metal is not just assayed, but when it's refined, it has trace materials into it, trace of other metals, even salts. And to that end, those trace elements can be so specific that they can not only tell where the mine was that it was assayed from or mined from, but they can sometimes even tell which end of the mine or how deep it was because of the trace elements. This one's closer to a water source. This one's closer to a salt water source. You know, those trace elements are still in there. It's very hard to refine an element extremely pure. especially in those days, so there's more trace elements to worry to review and go over. If anyone of you has ever flown over Michigan, sometimes you look down and you'll see these fascinatingly beautiful emerald green lakes and ponds and sloughs out there. My family's a farm family originally from North Dakota, but one of these farmers drained this slough and began to excavate. And in the bottom of this slough that had been for 300 years that he knew of, that it was completely full, was the first time it was drained that he was aware of, he found multiple bulkheaded mine entrances. And on the left side of every entrance, there was a mezuzah carved into it, a Hebrew mezuzah. These were copper mines. And almost all the copper artifacts that you find in the Rockefeller Museum today all trace back to Michigan, Copper Harbor, Michigan. Okay. You've heard of Copper Harbor, Michigan, that whole area. Well, this is where those were found. There have been some articles that were found in digs in Middle East that trace to different parts of Arizona and New Mexico. Some that also trace to Central America and South America. The first time that we find individuals owning or having land here in this country was actually the Indians. The Indians. There's the five civilized nations of the Floridas. Many of you have heard those terms before, but if you ask yourself, you know, what that means is the Cherokee, the Chickasaw, the Choctaw, the Crete, and the Seminole, they had all occupied the Floridas. And these are the five civilized nations of the original Floridas. If you ever listen to how they pronounce the name of their god while they're dancing around their fire, it's interesting. Yahweh, that's almost exactly the way the Hebrews pronounce the name of their god. We came in and find allodial title that we claim after we take it from someone else when they had original title. It's a little bit of a struggle in one's mind to rectify that. The Bureau, what is now the BLM, Bureau of Land Management, after passing through many stages of etymology, took much of the Indian land and claimed it for themselves. But because the U.S. government was not allowed to own more than 10 miles square, District of Columbia, Washington, D.C., and the forts, arsenals, magazines, naval yards, etc., and those bases meant for bivouacking or for housing armies for the defense of the nation, they had to sell this property off. Much of that property that they took away from the original owners, they say, does not have allodial title. In fact, if you go to allodial title and you do a Google search on it, it'll say that Nevada and Texas have created a limited allodial title provisions to protect property owners' rights from property taxes increase. In Nevada, it'll say that one can obtain allodial title if the property was not mortgaged, no liens or was held, and was the owner's primary residence. These are fabrications created by modern government. Title in Elodium, when it comes, there's Elodial title and title in Elodium. They're not quite the same. Well, they mean a lot. Title in Elodium indicates that the owner of that property is the highest authority, and not just in governmental stages of that property, but in taxing. Now, in those cases, when it says title in Elodium, the individual there was still responsible to, in this case, the king. Okay, especially in the Spanish and English land grants, the French land grants gave a little bit more autonomy in some of the land grants, but most of them were still responsible to the emperor. And if you look closely in around Louisiana and Florida, in fact, we have students that their families hold or have held Elodial title in the Floridas or Louisiana area. And remember, the Louisiana Purchase, which we purchased from the French government, and Napoleon himself felt a little bit disgruntled about what was given away, tried to take it back, and then we took it back again. Louisiana Purchase isn't something that just entails the state of Louisiana, but goes up like the equivalent of the drawing of a small whirlwind using the Mississippi Delta as its focal point, all the way up through the western central states. Napoleon held that title. Okay, there's much of that that later had Spanish land grants on it that Napoleon took, quote unquote, from the Indians. They were some of those land grants, French land grants and Spanish land grants. Then there's a mixture of them, salt and pepper through there, that go all the way down, all the way from the upper western mid-central U.S. all the way down to the Mississippi Delta, and then to the east into the Floridas. There are a handful of grants there that to this day have survived all the different etymologies of the Department of the Interior and the BLM. Okay, what happens is that the BLM is something that's relatively new. It was only established in 1946, I believe. But its roots go back many, many years when it was called the General Land Office. One of our students has a copy of a land grant that their family had that was signed by the president, one of our presidents himself. And of all the possibilities that could transpire, there's you purchasing a piece of property that could have the etymology that the individual property owner was or still could be the highest taxing authority by accident, because there are so much property out there that did have Elodial title. You have a chance of 1 in 7 of finding one that actually has original Elodial title to it, a title in Elodium. Now, Elodial title means that you've traced the title back to the original land grant. There's much territory that was held by the American Indians that was later held either by Spain or France, and that the king, quote unquote, in an effort to encourage individuals to do their bidding, granted them title in Lodium, meaning that they were the highest taxing authority, and just so that they could say that they controlled that property. The General Land Office was one of the earliest versions of what is now the BLM. That was established in, it's easy to remember that one. You remember the War of 1812? Well, it was established in 1812 with the 1812 Overture. There, 1812, that's when the General Land Office literally was started. What happens is that these properties, if you do your research in advance and choose to purchase based on the possibility or that you know that this was part of one of those original land grants, sometimes you can do, if you do a title search using an existing title company, and there's a lot of them out there. Some of the more respectable ones are Lawyers Title, Old Republic Title. There's some that are less respectable. In fact, one of the vice presidents of Orange Coast Title specifically keeps track of anybody looking for something that could look like a Lodial title. He almost lost everything in the 70s during the discovery that there was a chunk of land on the west side of Los Angeles in the beach community that was still held by families, and that the eminent domain events that seized the property for the state of California and the county of Los Angeles and the city of Los Angeles were null and void. And to that end, he's a little less pleasant to deal with. There's a handful of title companies that you can actually initiate. You should never bring up the fact that you're researching a Lodial title, but just say I want to do a title search that goes back to the original grant. I just want to know the history of my. Now, because they're not going to have to insure this, the cost, because you're not seeking title insurance, maybe you are, but if you're not, because you're not seeking title insurance, this search and research is less expensive than a regular title policy, and you can get them to do a lot of the initial legwork for you. In fact, if you're just dipping your toes in the pond and just starting to learn how to do what you want to and need to do, Old Republic Title is a good place to start. They have access to almost everybody else's work, but so far, to my knowledge to date, they have not colored outside the lines as far as calling somebody up and saying, hey, this person's looking at this property. We think there may be something that might be, you may want to scoop in there before they get it. To my knowledge, they haven't done that. At this juncture, looking at places where if you're going to look for a property that has title in a Lodium and has a Lodial title, meaning that it's been traced to all the way back to a Lodium, do it tactfully and diplomatically. They're entrepreneurs as well as you are. You're probably doing it so that you don't have to pay taxes. You can make money. You can move your margin, that line where your budget, the net metering on your budget, colors on the side of the page that has the black ink on it rather than the red ink. Okay, they're trying to do the same thing as well as you are. So make sure that when you bring it up, that you it's a good way to get your feet wet if you're really looking for title in Elodium. And to that end, what they do is they come back with that search and all their findings, and they provide it to you. You say thank you, and you pay them their, in many cases, it's only $2,000 or $3,000 to get that kind of search. Some of them, I heard of one individual in Pennsylvania and one in the Ohio Valley that just in the last 3 months, both of them had searches that were done completely to not just Elodia title, but Elodium. And it was even alluded to in the, both of their title searches before they bought their piece of property for less than $800. Both of them had property that, and in this case, both the properties were farm property. They were not developed urban real estate. These were undeveloped suburban rural. One was suburban, the other was rural. But they paid less than $800 for their title search. We chatted a little bit. They asked, both of them flew down here. With, they, neither of them knew each other. They were in a class that we did 26 years ago or 27 years ago. They were both in the same class together. And they were previously to that, they were in a, they both separately were in classes that Justice Breshears taught 27 and one of them 28 years ago. They, one was in Arizona, one was here in the, Gulf Coast area of Texas. Justice Breshears and I may have a teeny-weeny bit of history somewhere, or may have known each other for a little while. But these individuals, after doing their due diligence, their search, one of them has now purchased himself 6.5 section, and the other has, she has purchased herself 4 sections square in Pennsylvania that are all on the border of an urban area. That's why I say suburban. But her intention is to complete farming. This is a grandmother that they're a Mennonite persuasion, but she didn't want the government's interference or entanglements, and so she had been doing this research for many, many years, and she's finally found a place to have her family. Her husband passed away 2 years ago, and but she's got herself a place where she just filed 4 weeks ago in Pennsylvania, and they served the county with a court order that says that they have no jurisdiction for taxation 4 weeks ago. And what happened was that they, after verifying all the data, she had everything to completely prepared. She had a young man that was 23 years old that specialized in this in law school. His parents put him through law school for 3 things, this being one of them. And so he paid particular attention to land purchase, and he was very, very familiar with Pennsylvania land law, and put the pleading together in such a way that when it was presented to the judge says, wow, you know, there's nothing here I can argue with. And, both of the property taxing jurisdictions there, one of them yielded almost immediately. The other one argued. They had 2 subsequent hearings, or 2 additional days of hearings, and they yielded, they non-suited for an agreed-to motion to dismiss. And they, and when somebody can do it, educate their opponents to the point where their opponents say, you know what, I see what he or she is saying. This is the right, you know what, we need to dismiss. you know, or we need to settle with them. And if, when it's done that way, to me, that's the first hint that maybe some of the litigation was handled correctly. And so she came in clean hands, no back taxes, no nothing, no arguments, but had, the, and on hers, it's, it was a very, very particular, peculiar situation where that part of that land grant, is a very small grant, and she was only able to get a nibble off of it. And it's the grant was written in such a way that, I've seen a few similarities in other land grants, but I've never seen one like this before. And, but it's, there, the possibility of finding property by looking for it, is your chances, I think, are 1 in 2 of being able to be successful at, choosing your first round draft pick and then, signing the contract, okay? On picking out the property. It's very, very important that, if you, think the property that you have has potential possibilities, of title in Elodium, meaning that the individual, the property owner is the highest authority, highest taxing authority, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And that was another thing that, an individual that was in Illinois came up with. The sheriff, actually there's even a better one. And this one had a sheriff involved in it too. In the Ohio Valley, there was a farmer that had title in Elodium, had Elodio title. There were only 4 transfers of the property since the original land grant. All of the deeds were, in this particular case, each successive purchaser was handed the previous deed and everything from the original land grant. And that particular one, there, title in Elodium, it was unquestionable, and Elodio title was also, meaning that it was traced from the etymology of the current holder back to the grant. And this was in the Ohio Valley. This gentleman was farming, had purchased a bunch of green and gold. For those of you who are not familiar with the pun, that's a farmer's reference to John Deere tractors. Had purchased a whole bunch of green and gold and a whole bunch of John Deere tractors, got in very, very deep when 3 years in a row, the rain didn't do very well. And he fell into arrears. John Deere financing repossessed the tractors, filed writ of repossession, or filed for writ of possession on repossession, and foreclosed on the farm equipment. And the sheriff showed up with deputies, entered the property. James was smart enough to keep his hands by his side, but he knew they were coming because he had got the threatening letters from John Deere, et cetera, and the threatening letter from the local court. And when the sheriff came on there, he smiled at him, had a cup of coffee out of a hot thermos waiting for him, and gave him photocopies of his title in Elodium and the trace, and explained to him that he didn't have jurisdiction there. And the two attorneys for John Deere financing and all the deputies scoffed at it, and they hauled the tractors off. They came in with these flatbed gooseneck lowboys, and spent the day loading up tractors loading up green and gold painted iron. This gentleman, he was very quiet, very kind. He spoke very softly. He then proceeded to state district court, quietly filed against John Deere and the sheriff. He was the highest authority on that land. The sheriff, the local sheriff of the elected community, did not supersede his grant. John Deere didn't return the tractors. They bought him all new ones. In fact, of the four combines that were originally taken, they gave him back seven. They asked him how many he could use, not how much they needed. He had a bunch of these 50-40 tractors. They had some 88-40 dualies, four-wheel drive. They he ended up getting almost twice as much farm equipment back, lien free, because John Deere agreed to settle out of court. They apologized. They didn't realize that the jurisdiction had been exceeded. When you're in the right, you don't need to fight. Not when they're holding guns and you're not. When there's an army full of young, trigger happy, and I say young, and that can be 60 years young, trigger happy, tactically proficient crisis management trained individuals that have had their skills for 30 years, 40 or 50 years, and not had a chance to take it out and play with it. And all of a sudden, you're the opportunity for them to take it out and play with it. You don't want any itchy trigger fingers out there playing that game with you. You want to have what this gentleman did, a smile on his face, a thermos in his hand, and a box of fresh-baked cookies, you know, and donuts to serve so that you were verifiably non-belligerent. And then you take your case to court. You do it quietly. And when the court sees that you, even though you had implicit standing and maybe that you owned weapons, maybe you owned guns, and you didn't leave any single law enforcement officer with that left your property with any extra orifices. You know, they all came and went with the same amount of holes in their body, you know, the two for the nose, the two for the ears, the one for the mouth, you know. And I will leave the other ones unidentified at the moment. You left them all intact. That says a lot when you speak very softly and very respectfully to all of a sudden having somebody correct you. Now, do you think his wife was frayed, scared kittens, was ready to claw her teeth on rock? Absolutely. His three sons and five daughters all freaked out. One of the sons didn't, but the five daughters freaked out. They were emotional train wrecks. He said, "You guys, let's pray," and he took it to court. And and they were granted grace. So when you have and you've traced your title back to Elodium, and you've got allodial title, meaning it's traced back to its original etymology, that's extremely good. Then topic number five, or class number five on this one, in this series, will be on steps and stepping stones to get to title in Elodium or a tax-free land parcel. And, you know, when we talk about tax-free land parcels, remember, the people that we have taking care of this government and defending the nation have to get paid somehow. So when we come to that, you'll see why some of the things that we point out are what they point out, what they choose to be. So do your due diligence. If you're looking for property and you don't already own it, begin to research some of the original British, Spanish, French land grants that did or were known to have title and allodium. And there's a family that lives in Fort Dutuy. Most of you know it as Detroit. But it was a French fort called Fort Dutuy that recently, their little apartment building, their little 8-unit apartment building, has title and allodium. So it turns up in the strangest places. With that, my time has now come to a close. I'm exactly on time tonight for the first time in a while. We now open up to question and answers. If you choose to ask a question and you can remain on subject matter topic, I think that it's a nice way to punctuate the evening and draw out any synergies. You're not required to maintain any subject matter topic. You can ask questions on any topic you please. With that, back to you, Martin and Michael.
Yeah, thank you very much, Brother John. Before we step into this, I just wanted to make a quick comment that everyone thinks that the initiation of our country was in 1620 in Plymouth Rock, Massachusetts, when in reality it was St. Augustine, Florida, 1565, 55 years prior to Plymouth Rock. And Florida is basically every inch of land of Florida was under original patent from the King of Spain. And the first name of our country from the Atlantic to the Pacific, including Canada, was Florida. A little bit of trivia there. So our first caller is Jennifer. Press *2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hand. Press *2 on your keypad to raise your hand. For those of you on Freedom's Radio, you will see that there is a silhouette of a rectangle laying on its side in the middle right of your monitor. Left click into that, type away your comment or question. Underneath that rectangle, you'll see a place to put your name and some other information. Hit submit, and it will pop up on my end for your comment or question, and I'll be happy to lend my voice for you. So let's open up with Miss Jennifer. Go ahead.
Good evening, John, Michael, and Martin. So where does the United States Corporation come into play here? Because they pretend to own all of the United States, and so they can tax all of the United States land. And so I don't understand the relationship between them and the Constitutional Republic, say, and all the land grants. So is there a way of having it recognized that your land is not in the United States Corporation, but it is in the Constitutional Republic? And if it is in the Constitutional Republic, then does it have to, do you still have to prove a title in allodium or a allodial title to get off the tax rolls?
Yeah, John, before you answer that, may I have the first part of it, please?
Yes, go ahead, please.
It is most important everyone understand we're talking about 51 different constitutions. And the 51 are divided between 50 on one side and one on the other side. The one on the other side was meant to serve the 50 on this side. The 50 on this side are Union states, originally organized under the Articles of Confederation, 7-8 years later, amended, renamed a constitution for the United States of America. And at that time, then, the United States came into being. It's important to remember we have 51 constitutions. Back to you, John.
Okay. The government has come to the place where if they say something, they like to believe their own press. And to that end, because the government carries a teeny bit of weight in most courts, what happens is that we're tasked instead of, and this is really, really, really bad. When we've grown up in a country where technically you're innocent until proven guilty, they like to say you're guilty and you're required to pay tax until you're proven innocent. Well, the object here is that we need to provide enough question in everybody's mind that the government does not have the authority. And to that end, when that occurs, then and we've embarrassed them enough that they realize that they may not have the authority that they're claiming, then they have to prove up. But there's a lot of individuals that say, Your Honor, we're challenging in personam jurisdiction. Okay. in this court, that question has been bantered and re-bantered and cussed and discussed till everybody's blue in the face. The judge automatically says, it's already been proven, res judicata. Go away. Bring me another question. And so what happens is that the individuals, they feel like they've been run over, and realistically they have. But what happens is that they never raise the question enough high to a high enough level, for the years that that court has been, adjudicating these type of matters to, have the in personam jurisdiction question. Now, territorial jurisdiction is the same way. So many individuals have said, well, we're challenging territorial jurisdiction. Well, in the absence of you presenting a convincing argument to show that previous rulings were in error, they will go with all the previous rulings. And so this is as bad as it sounds, almost a guilty till proven innocent. And for individuals that need to get off the tax rolls right away, getting proof and the all-encompassing documentation to show that you have title in allodium, sometimes it's not easy, and a faster way is Justice Breshear's path of a charitable religious trust that owns the property, does benevolent events, et cetera, so many times a year, and has evidence that they do what they do and that they are God, country, and mom and apple pie kind of organization. And so when the Treasury Department says, we're revoking your 508, and I didn't say 501, you notice I said 508, because 508's outside the purview, technically, of the government means now you're, Now, your donations are not tax deductible, but what happens is that they don't have a right to, unless they have substantial compelling evidence that comes to them, to even question a 501c3. But if you're building skyscrapers in downtown Miami and claiming that you're a corp soul, that's going to draw some flies. That's going to draw some questions. If you're running a gambling casino in, in River City and, turning profits in, not in the millions, but the billions per year, they're going to begin to question that. But if you're, if you actually genuinely, are a God-fearing individual, you truly realize that you don't own the property in the first place. And for those of you out there, there's something called the acid test of ownership. And this is, some of you have heard of this, some of you may not have. But when you, to prove you own something, you ask yourself the following questions. If you either bought it with you when you came to this rock, or you can take it with you when you leave, then you the man, or you the girl, you the owner. But if you either didn't bring it with you when you came to this rock, or you can't take it with you to leave, then you're not the guy, or you're not the woman. And which begs the question, well, who is it? Who does own the sheep? Is that the guy that owns the sheep and the cattle and the thousand hills and all the gold and silver they're in? And so what happens is that sometimes these arguments require adjudication from on high. And I have seen some abominable stuff come out of the courts. And you can, you can log on to some of Michael's calls. And so from time to time, he shares some of the stories that he and I have personally witnessed of stuff that the courts are so corrupt. Everything, the banks so corrupt, everybody was so corrupt, and the father quietly, with just a whisper, didn't even blow hard, intervened, and completely turned everything around. We have had the honor and the privilege of, just in the last 3 months, seeing things that have just blown cognition away. Your mental thought processes just would be completely disrupted by some of the things that we've had the honor and the privilege of seeing the Most High King do. And so with that, and the fact that they, one of them was completely implacable. There was no way out. There was no solution. There was no grace to be had. It was done. It wasn't even done. Don't worry. It's much worse than you think. They were already put a fork in it. And all of a sudden, the father turned it around. So, when I proceed, regardless of what learning or background I may have, I ask the Most High King's direction. Because when this is all said and done, you know, all of you and I, we're going to pass from this place shortly. You know, I don't know about you guys, but I've got a lot less shopping days in front of me than I have behind me. And, I want to make sure that however it slices out, that I do it right. And it says that he punishes the wicked to the third generation, but the righteous he blesses for countless generations. Sam Walton was proud in 1992 to say that there were very few PG, if any PG movies, mostly PG-13 movies that you could buy in Walmart. And that 90% of his goods were American and less than 10% were imported. And that he was a God-fearing man. And the kids, the grandkids are colored outside the lines really badly. And I remember hearing Sam say that himself personally. I heard Sam say that, you know, but the kids are colored outside the lines, but the father is still blessing that organization because of somebody up on top. We bless the Most High King, when we started this nation, there was an effort to try to seek to serve the Most High King. That's the reason many of us and our ancestors came to this country. We need to continue that. Jennifer, you're fighting not as brutal as a battle as I've seen, but we've got still a few things to cover on yours. And I think we're going to get you to a medium place where we can eventually finish the research on that particular land grant there. And at that end, it's when we show up in court and we have all of the evidence without equivocation, and that they there's nothing that they can argue against, then things get overturned. And I believe that's when, you know, like the Hardenberg patent there, you know, we will be able to take those and show those off, and prove to them that they've never had the jurisdictional authority to tax your land.
Okay. Well, thanks. And are we still on for tomorrow morning?
Yeah, about that. Yeah, let's see. What time do we already have scheduled?
10:30 or 11? I'm not sure.
Could we bump that up to 10 o'clock Eastern, 9 o'clock East, 9 o'clock Central?
10 a.m. Eastern tomorrow.
Yeah, 10 a.m. Eastern, 9 a.m. Central. So
yes.
if we could do that at 10 o'clock, that would be greatly appreciated.
Thank you.
Thank you. I have to take my wife in for a procedure at the hospital tomorrow, and I've got technically a noon commitment to. So I thank you for your patience and your graciousness.
Well, thank you for fitting me in.
Hey, there's a girl. you and Anita, you two bless my heart.
You're a man and I'm the girl.
Okay. We're not going to go there. okay, request lines are open. Next victim, please. I mean, next caller. I mean,
can you two behave, please? Just behave.
I once knew a young lady that was so well behaved, we called her Miss Behaved.
All right, really good. Thank you so much. Jennifer, any other questions?
No, thank you.
Thank you. All right, press star 2 on your keypad, ladies and gentlemen, to raise your hands. Press star 2. Well, I'm going to check Freedom's radios real quick, see what we have over here. Give me just a moment. Hit refresh. Bah, 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 bah. Nope, no more questions there. And got a good number of people over there. Anyone else? Press star 2 on your keypad. Otherwise, we're going to say goodnight early. And, you know, it's no fun.
Hey, brother, it's not going to hurt my feelings tonight. I've still got a lot of work for some of these students.
I know.
I'm going to be up all most of the night.
So any closing comments, John?
Walk humbly. Know that we are pilgrims in an unholy land. For the time that we have the honor and the privilege of holding some of this land, let's do it in a way that honors the Most High King so that he can bless that, so that for perpetuity, our descendants, whether they be our children or whoever, those that we would have, that they can hold it peaceably and without persecution.
Well,
thank you all.
Thank you. I want to remind everyone tomorrow night, same time, same phone, same pin, same place on the internet. Herr Slevin, Mr. Slevin, will be sharing with us his limited liability company, and you really need to hear about it. If you're an employee, especially so. If you are an employer, i.e. an entrepreneur, especially so. So until then, good night, everyone, and be well.
The conference is now completed. Goodbye. Welcome to the conference. Please enter the conference ID, followed by the pound key. Thank you. Guest ID accepted.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.